KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect.
Well, if you look at your phone, your watch, the clock on the wall, the sundial, whatever, 1 o'clock, Monday through Friday, ABQ Connect, your late lunch, and some things coming up this week you might want to have on your radar. I believe the first part of the show on Thursday, which, by the way, Thursday is 9/11, and on the broadcast, we will be remembering and talking about why it's important to remember. We'll do that with Vince Harrison and others that join us in the studio, probably Mark Chavez. Vince, of course, a former APD detective, and Mark Chavez, former AFD. Both of these guys went out to Ground Zero days after 9/11. Pastor Skip Heitzig, part of that group that went out. Jennifer Santiago, I don't know if Jennifer will be on the broadcast. We'll reach out to her. She's part of Reload Love Ministry, reaching out to children that are victims of terrorism to this day. So we do see a lot of the great work that came from that time continuing. But we will look back, 24 years now, and that'll be on Thursday's show. On Friday, we'll get a quick visit with the guys that are going to be out here as guests, guest speaking and guest worship leading for Man Up. The men are all meeting at Calvary Church. Whether you attend Calvary or not, this is for all men to come out for Man Up for free food, guys, right? 5:30, that gets underway. And actually, I'm told instead of the brats or hot dogs, hamburgers, they're having pancakes and bacon. Bacon. Yeah, Man Up. They're having breakfast for dinner. So that starts at 5:30. By 6:30, they'll be in the hub, worship led by Stephen Christian, who used to lead worship right here at Calvary Church Albuquerque. He's got a brand new music project out from a side project, Anchor and Braille, appropriately named New Mexico. And actually, we're not going to talk about that in the interview, but we'll have Stephen and Kevin and Taylor Bronis, a pastor from Calvary Church, who oversees Man Up, on the broadcast with us Friday. Paul Gessing in studio with us for the full hour today with the Rio Grande Foundation. Paul, 24 years ago, when I mention that, does it take you back? Do you have specific memories of that fateful day?
Well, yeah, I was in the D.C. area at that time, so technically Old Town Alexandria is where I was working, and, you know, God, I mean, I could go into all the different aspects of it, but the first thing that I remember was on my way in, there was a discussion on the radio about a plane hitting one of the World Trade Towers in New York. And, you know, you're sitting there listening on the radio. It's really hard to tell what kind of incident we were talking about. Was this a 747 or something, or was this a small commuter plane where some careless operator, I mean, it was a beautiful day on the East Coast, not a cloud in the sky, just like kind of every day here in New Mexico.
It really typically was a beautiful, was.
Then after I went up to my office and got, you know, in front of a TV, I knew, because very quickly thereafter, the second plane hit, and we know the rest. Of course, I was up in New York at the 9/11 Museum and World Trade Center Memorial just this summer with my kids.
I have not been. I saw Ground Zero in the process of being, you know, restored.
Yeah, it is incredible. I was up there, after the towers had been knocked down, not like right away, but within the year of it being done. And it was a huge tragedy. Of course, the Pentagon as well. So I saw, you know, smoke from the Pentagon. I have pictures where I rode my bike and was able to get close enough to see that facing side of the Pentagon when I was living in the D.C. area. And yeah, a huge tragedy. I'll never forget that day and numerous other events that happened around that time period.
Paul, I don't want to go too deep because we're going to do it sure. Thursday. But I don't know if you're like me. Every year, I purpose to watch documentaries, even ones I've already seen. And actually, there's one in particular that I watch because it so puts you right there. And you know, for me, it's to remember. And and for me, you know, looking at Scripture, you know, we see many times in Scripture where they'll you know pile rocks and to not forget to remember things that God had done. And I do think it's important that we remember. We'll go into more depth on Thursday, but I don't know. Each year, do you find it kind of squeak by, or do you purpose to?
Well, I don't dwell on things, and my life is pretty busy with three kids and an organization, the Rio Grande Foundation, to run. But, you know, I always try to think about it, ponder it. And, of course, it was a little more visceral this year, like I said, just a few months ago, being up there in New York and seeing it in person.
I'm glad you got to do that.
Yeah. It's worth doing if you ever get to New York.
And I'm glad that you could take the time to join us for the full hour today. Again, Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. We have plenty to go through. And, you know, eventually we'll get to some of your blogs on errorsofenchantment.com. But let's start with, I'm trying to remember where this content came from in regards to news from the office of the governor, Michelle Lujan. Maybe it's direct, you know, press release, I guess, from...
It is. It's a press release announcing the special session. And we know the date is now October 1st. We knew it was going to be sometime after the state fair and sometime before the balloon fiesta, and that's exactly when it will be. It'll be on the later side of things, October 1st. So they'll have a few days to do what they need to do before getting home and seeing all the new faces around town for balloon fiesta. But other than that, the main issue is that the governor changed fairly dramatically from the first trial balloons to where we are now. She'll have a little more detail in terms of what she's going to put on the agenda for the special session. But right now, she's mostly going to hand out money. It's going to be like Christmas in early October. She's going to put out funding for rural health care delivery, health insurance premiums for those on Medicaid. She's going to put some money into SNAP and keeping more people in that program. And then she's going to also throw some money at the public broadcasting, PBS and NPR. So, yeah, just handing out tax dollars to a lot of different folks.
Listen, not that we want it, but I'm sure there was no inkling, a thought of financially supporting other nonprofit radio.
No, I don't think so. The one that we were expecting that didn't happen was the ICE facilities that were detaining immigrants in three different counties across the state. I think those counties sufficiently were able to get through to the governor that eliminating those facilities and the jobs and the money flowing into them would be significantly damaging to those areas, and so the governor pulled those off. So,
well, regardless of the reasoning, you know, maybe reason for, well, kudos. Okay, maybe there was some listening going. You hope some listening.
Well, she will listen if you have a message that is kind of broadly in line with some of the things that she agrees with, and as a politician, I'm sure she wants to keep jobs and money flowing in from Washington, D.C. That's the reason we're having the special session in the first place, because Trump's big, beautiful bill that passed through Congress and he signed was going to reduce somewhat the amount of money flowing in through the Medicaid program and the SNAP program, et cetera.
Is that equivalent to what he's doing in other states, or is some of what's happening with the reduction in federal assistance to New Mexico due to actions from our leaders here in this state?
Well, the Big Beautiful Bill reduces the annual growth of Medicaid and limits certain people from receiving those benefits. The system is ultimately set up by the federal government, but states can and have, as New Mexico has expanded it. Obama expanded it with Obamacare. So it would not... I don't know exactly what their plans are in the special session, and the cuts are not going to even be impacting New Mexico for another year and a half. So this, I think, is much more political messaging and pandering than it is dealing with the clear and present danger. But the governor always has an eye out for her progressive base. So she is trying to do this quickly and early, as opposed to when she's a total lame duck after the 30-day session.
Something did stand out to me in the press release. Let me read from it. It says, and I think this is a quote from the governor, "After discussions with legislative leaders, we've resolved to do everything possible to protect essential services." That's the phrase that still got to sit out to me. "And minimize the damage from President Trump's disastrous bill," unquote, she calls that.
Right.
But when I see essential services, as mentioned, you know, as being labeled by our governor or others that are in the progressive movement, I think back to things that were labeled essential during COVID, and they kind of ebbed and waned, ebbed and flowed depending on what their personal needs were. In some circumstances, so it kind of stands out to me, I don't know that they will clearly define essential services anyway, but
no, and of course, yes, poverty is an issue in our state, but we've had billions and billions of dollars flowing in here. The government has largely hung on to it, and spent the rest. We are not doing much at all to return money to the taxpayers. We're not doing anything to bring businesses here that would create more jobs, economic prosperity. There is a distinct lack of vision when it comes to how New Mexico could move itself out of dead last in so many areas and move itself into a higher position. Instead, we'll just use some of that money to keep people on welfare the same way they were, not to encourage them and incentivize them to move out of welfare, because unfortunately the people who lead our state, predominantly of the Democratic Party, they have a mindset of, we want to keep people on welfare. We want to keep people dependent on us because they'll vote for them in the future.
All right. So October 1st, the special session gets underway. Paul, any end date for that, or is it when they're done, they're done?
I'm sure it will last a few days. I am sure that there are talks going on, as they have been, to discuss exactly what is going to happen. These things tend to be rather stovepiped in the sense that they are set up and ready to be voted on very quickly in a special session. It's not really the way democracy is supposed to work, or even a democratic republic. It's much more, if you're in the room, if you have the numbers, you can get what you want done. And the governor will, I think she believes, get most of these things done, because they're mostly just spending money, not anything that's going to take skin off of anybody's nose.
All right, Paul Gesing with the Rio Grande Foundation. He is our guest for the full hour. When we come back, more about our governor. A headline from Errors of Enchantment that reads, MLG rewards her closest friends in government. We'll find out more about that when we come back from the break on ABQ Connect. Hey, over the past few weeks, we've been telling you about the Release, it happened on September 5th, the release of the documentary Truth Rising. Truthrising.com is where to go to view it at no cost, find information about it. And we spent, a half hour visiting with Jim Daly, host of Focus on the Family, who, by the way, the documentary put out by Focus on the Family and the Colson Center, hosted by Oz Guinness and John Stonestreet. John, of course, who heads up the Colson Center. But I bring it up again, not only to encourage you to go watch it. I've watched it. It's fantastic. And we, in addition to visiting with Jim Daly about it, we visited with Jack Phillips. He's the baker in the Denver area who just refused to, be part of producing a cake that was, went contrary to his beliefs. And he stood his ground, and the Supreme Court agreed with him. It's a piece of history, really. But we visited with him already on Thursday's ABQ Connect. I intend to spend a short time visiting with Zach Dillon. Zach is the CEO of the Babylon Bee, and both Jack and Seth and all these guys taking a stand for what they believe in and how important that is in the culture that we're in now, as we see what Oz Guinness suggests might be, the ending of Western culture. But we do encourage you to go to truthrising.com to watch that documentary. And then we'll keep you posted. But in the fall, they intend to release a 4-week study guide to go along with that documentary. So we'll keep you posted on that as well. In studio with us for the remainder of the hour, Paul Gessing is here from the Rio Grande Foundation. Paul at errorsofenchantment.com, which, by the way, Rio Grande Foundation's website. It's RioGrandeFoundation.org, but errorsofenchantment.com. We find one of your posts I mentioned going into the break, headlined "MLG Rewards Her Closest Friends in Government."
Yeah, and this is just a classic case of politicians rewarding people that they are close to and sticking the rest of us with the bill. This was outlined in the Albuquerque Journal recently, and I expound on it somewhat because let's just get to the facts. First and foremost, the governor outlined up to 26% pay raises for some of her closest advisors. Many of those advisors received significant pay hikes to boot recently, but this is a issue that's gone back to 2024 and 2021, where the governor also gave some of her closest advisors very, very generous pay increases. Now, the average government employee in New Mexico got 4% pay raises. I'm not saying they should get more. I actually would like to see some way of tracking the effectiveness of what people in government are doing, like they do in the private sector, and having pay tied to, maybe New Mexico getting out of dead last in education, crime, our economy being stagnant, us having among the most poverty in the entire country. Maybe if they incentivize these government employees a little bit more, I would be a lot less concerned about it. But she got reelected. She's a lame duck. She doesn't have any accountability, really, aside from what she can do or not do up in Santa Fe. And, we've given her this power, and now she's really using it for the benefit of her friends. So it's an unfortunate and kind of dirty aspect of government, in my opinion.
All right, and you'll find that, again, at errorsofenchantment.com. Another blog you posted there, Paul, on Maxeon Solar Company, who we've brought, let's review for those who
who
weren't dialed into when we first brought
this
up.
This is not a quiz show. I always give a little bit of detail. So 2 years ago, the governor again outlined and highlighted and did a splashy press conference. This solar company called Maxeon, M-A-X-E-O-N, was going to come to New Mexico and build a $1 billion facility to put together their solar panels. Fast forward a year from that, so about a year ago, they came out with another announcement and said, well, you know, we're not going to build this entire new facility from scratch at Mesa del Sol. We're going to take over an existing warehouse and convert that to build solar panels. And the latest information we have from Maxeon is that they were supposed to do this, you know, get this thing ready to go so that they would have solar panels rolling off the assembly lines by early 2026. Well, talk to a friend in commercial real estate, and he said that he has heard absolutely nothing. No permits being pulled, no construction taking place, nothing happening at the facility that Maxeon supposedly has leased. I don't know the details on that lease and what they've done or not done, but you haven't heard anything in New Mexico's media since May 1st of this year. So we're talking several months back. In the meantime, the company's revenue for the first half of 2025 dropped from the year before from $372 million to $39 million. Apparently, there were also issues with slave labor in China and potential violations of federal law relating to that. I don't know whether it's valid or not, but it was sufficiently important that Maxeon itself did a press release to decry these accusations. All that gets us to the point that we have a yet another example of our governor coming up with this magical, beautiful, major proposal that she is saying is going to happen, and quietly it doesn't happen. And the media really are not in the business of calling her out on it. It falls to guys like me and the Rio Grande Foundation to say, hey, what's going on with this thing? So here we are 2 years and about a month since the governor made her first big announcement. And yeah, it's just crickets.
Yeah, Paul, how far do you think it would go? And it's, I don't know what's going to happen with Maxeon here in New Mexico, but how, you know, let's say, you know, it's not going to happen. You know, let's say, how far do you think it would go for the governor or others involved to come out and, like, you know, hey, in spite of the fact we had the highest hopes, you know, but for various reasons or these specific reasons, it's not going to happen, or it's going to be delayed, or it's, you know, we're going to change direction. How far do you think an announcement like that would go? We mentioned that they quietly, you know, and you can real easily say, well, that's very political. But what are your thoughts there?
Well, this governor in particular, and this is a trend not so much just with her, but a lot of modern politicians, they tend to say a lot of things and they never follow up with them. Now, this was a little bit bigger of a deal because there was all this praise in the business press and all of these articles written about how Maxeon was going to make a splash in the United States and in New Mexico and this, that, and the other. I don't think she'll get to a point where she'll say, oh, you know, sorry, this isn't going to happen. I think she'll just continue to let it linger out there, and maybe it'll happen. As long as Maxeon's still in business, I suppose it will. Their stock price, I can tell you, I've been looking at it. It hasn't really budged since way back when. It fell quite dramatically for a time, and now it's kind of at $3 or so per share, which you know, they were up, they've lost 99%+ of their share price. So it's really down. They had a reverse stock split. I mean, Maxeon is not a company that if you were a smart investor, you would choose to put your own money in. But of course,
so if you had 10 shares, now you have 5.
Exactly. I think it was even a more aggressive split than that. It was like 10-1.
Yeah, wow.
And, you know, that's used to prop up the share price so that you remain listed on the stock market. So anyway, that is unfortunate aspect of, and my goal here is not just to say, oh, the governor does things we don't like, she doesn't do a good job, this, that, or the other. No, it's the way to develop an economy, New Mexico's, the United States, or anybody else's, is to have low taxes, fair regulations, the rule of law, good infrastructure, and to generally leave the market alone and let businesses that want to come and do business here do business. And if you don't just throw taxpayer dollars at those businesses to get them to come here.
All right. Well, you know, as we walk through these stories too, let me encourage the KLYT listener, especially for those who have a relationship with Christ, who you call yourself a Christian, to spend some time on your knees praying for our leadership in New Mexico, the governor, her administration, those serving in the roundhouse, in the Senate, and in the House. Pray for them. And pray that God would give them wisdom. Pray that those that are in that position that don't know him would grow to know him intimately. And keep yourself informed. It is important. You know, I say this because it is real easy, Paul, to read through news and just, you know, I mean, you know, we could say, you know, bad governor, and others can say bad orange man.
Right.
And I think it's important to lift all of these leaders in prayer. Pray for them. Pray for their families. Pray for the decisions they're making, and pray that God would reveal to them the direction that he wants New Mexico to go. Any more on that, Paul?
Absolutely. That's a very well-taken thought, and I also encourage people to be educated, to learn about the issues and what their politicians are doing.
Yes.
And I'll just say that the Rio Grande Foundation was in court recently on an issue relating to, for our perspective, it was financial and the state laws of New Mexico. From another perspective, it was about Albuquerque donating funds to Planned Parenthood. So there's not news there in the sense that nothing has happened yet, but we were in a courtroom a couple weeks ago, our attorneys arguing, if you'll recall, during the time between the Dobbs decision was leaked and when it was actually finalized by the Supreme Court, City Council of Albuquerque donated $250,000 of our tax money to Planned Parenthood. And we're fighting that in court, not because specifically the abortion issue, but because we don't believe that government, under the law of New Mexico, has the right to take that money from us and donate it to another interest group. So pray for the successful conclusion of that court case as well.
Yeah, amen. All right, listen, Paul Gessing is our guest for the full hour today on ABQ Connect from the Rio Grande Foundation. Would encourage you to go to riograndefoundation.org to find out more about the organization and much more than that when you go there. See some of the work that they're doing, and then find many of these blogs that we're mentioning are found at errorsofenchantment.com. And we're going to take a quick break. Come back with more after this on ABQ Connect. Hey, in case you didn't put it together there, Sheology, you just heard the promo from that was actually Janae Heitzig. I want to thank her. She, last minute last week, I asked her to come in to read that promo, and she's always makes herself available in ministry, and so much appreciate what she and Lenya and the other ladies do at Sheology. And Lenya, of course, this weekend at all the services at Calvary Church, making it a point to invite the ladies out tonight. It starts at 6:30, but come out early for some of those other activities and find out more at sheology.com. It's going to be in person at the Osuna campus. There's ways to watch it online. As far as childcare, it filled up. It typically does, but there is a waiting list. So in order to get on that, you need to come out for the event. So get someone to watch the kids tonight. Come to the event. Sign up to be on the waiting list for Sheology Kids if you'd like to bring them for other times that'll be available maybe as the study progresses. But Sheology, getting underway with a brand new study tonight, moral of the story, looking at the parables of Jesus. Details at Sheology.com. Paul Gessing, president of the Rio Grande Foundation, is our guest for the full hour today. Spent some time already, you know, Paul, in looking in review at the special session starting October 1st, called by our governor, and then some of the other things that you wrote about in blogs at Errors of Enchantment in regards to our governor. And now we look at more action, which, you know, I mean, she's doing a job, and she's going to be active doing it. And I thank you for the time you take to inform us of stuff that otherwise we may not be up to speed on. But what's going on with CYFD, and how's the governor involved?
So there are others who are more expert in the inner workings of CYFD. It stands for Children, Youth, and Families Department. It is admittedly a difficult thing to do for the government to step in and try to help children who are in dysfunctional, drug abusing, abusive families and situations and work to make things right. I don't pretend that that is an easy job, but this has been one of the very most kind of critiqued and criticized government agencies in New Mexico, which is that's a pretty big statement, because many aspects of New Mexico government are not particularly effective. But the secretary, Teresa Casados, who apparently is very tight with the governor, stepped down. Most believe she was fired because of the suddenness and immediacy of the elimination of that particular individual from her job. But this is not an area that the Rio Grande Foundation is especially knowledgeable with, but it is a area that the government has a critical role to play. I mean, we all wish that families in the United States and in New Mexico were all two parents working, or, you know, leading productive lives. And obviously, being a stay-at-home mom or dad is a form of work as well. You're very, very busy with that. The fact is that not every family is in that vein, and sometimes there's need for government to step in, but they just haven't done a good job. Now, juxtapose that with the announcement made in today's paper that the governor is now funding or planning to fund a universal early childhood program, universal child care for all New Mexicans. Already, this is the crazy thing, Steve. Already we're at up to four times the federal poverty level. That is what the state covers child care for. She wants to make that universal, which means that the people who are going to be getting that is...
You get child health care. You get child health care.
The higher income people.
You just have to attend New Mexico.
Yeah. So it's a baffling policy. It would be much preferable, and it almost seems like there's some kind of diversionary tactic that she wants to say, oh, well, don't worry about CYFD. We're going to do this universal early childhood thing, and it's going to be the first state. We're going to be the first state in the country. And it seems to me that she's playing for headlines, not for actually improving the lives of children in New Mexico. Because high income, and I looked it up, you want to know what currently, this is currently, if you have a household of three people, 400% of the federal poverty line, these are people who currently can be getting free childcare. A family of three people is above the is at the poverty line at $106,600. And she's going to now open it up to everybody above that level of wage. So $106,000 for a family of three is a pretty reasonable amount of money to live on in New Mexico.
All the millionaires and billionaires in New Mexico now have quote unquote free child health.
They will soon, yeah. There's not only one billionaire. There's a fair number of millionaires. But
now,
yeah.
now, for those who haven't put this, and most of us do, once as soon as we see this and words like free, let's send them a little reminder there, Paul.
It's paid for by the taxpayers, yes.
That's you and me.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
So it's ultimately, it's a classic case in New Mexico where government is failing so badly, so clearly on CYFD. We've had kids killed. We've had kids impacted negatively by drug use, and they've been sent back to their dysfunctional, drug-abusing families, abusive families, time and time again. We don't need to recite the litany of names. We need to do better with the existing programs, not adding a new child care entitlement to people making above 400 times or 400% of the federal poverty level. It's just, it's absurd. It's just not her money. It's not a priority for her to use it correctly. And we'll see. So this is supposed to start on November 1st, but I don't know how she's going to start it, because she has to also go through the 30-day legislative session. So I can promise you that this will be a priority discussion topic for us and others during the 30-day session.
All right. So, Paul, when it comes to other topics like education, crime, hot-button topics that we all, you know, that all come up when it comes to talking about what's happening in our state. When it comes to child development, and you know where New Mexico ranks, and which again is at the bottom, I'm thinking
almost always,
yeah. Is this an area? You know, in these other areas, we often bring up other states. Well, you know, here's a state that was dealing with this is what they did. You know, are we seeing that that's again, you know. Leadership, why are you not looking to other areas that had the same issues that implemented things that worked?
Well, I will plead the fifth that I do not know enough about the early childhood and CYFD programs to know exactly what is effective. It's one of the reasons that we don't engage with that particular topic, because you get into a whole different array of policies that, you know, I'm good at the dollars and cents. I can tell you if X, Y, and Z policy is going to be an effective use of tax dollar. But when it comes to family issues and helping children, the time to take a child out of a family or the put it back into a family, those are very, very specialized and tricky decisions. And quite frankly, nobody has 100% track record. But there's no doubt that we can do better. And that's, I think, what everybody who follows that issue is looking at. And apparently the governor just decided finally she'd had enough with her current CYFD secretary and decided to go a different direction.
Hey, let me say this. When it comes to wisdom about the family, I'd encourage you just to take some time walking through the book of Ephesians. You will find plenty of good insight there for husbands, wives, children, families, families in general. So spend some time there. And again, back to, you know, when it comes to these areas where our state leadership is doing what they're doing, be prayerful that they will make the necessary decisions and the God wisdom led decisions that our community needs. A full hour today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. That's riograndefoundation.org. And when we come back, we're going to go back out to Errors of Enchantment. It's a project, if I haven't mentioned it, of the Rio Grande Foundation, and you'll see often Paul writing the blogs there, others contribute, but we're going to return and talk more about our politicians pleading poverty on road funding. What that involves, we'll have Paul walk us through that when we come back from the break on ABQ Connect. A full hour today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. Paul, want to, well, first of all, again, thanks for taking the time not only to prepare the content for our conversation today, but to be here to walk through it. Always appreciate time spent with you in studio.
Well, glad to be here.
Let's jump back to errorsofenchantment.com. I mentioned it going into the break. New Mexico politicians plead poverty on road funding. You've brought up, I know, and you travel the state. You might know more than many of us, Paul, the condition of the roads and the need for something to happen.
Well, I have traveled certainly far and wide around New Mexico, and just here in the Albuquerque area, I can tell you that there are a lot of issues, and the studies done on these kinds of things indicate that it's not just anecdotal evidence, but New Mexico is facing a serious backlog and serious deterioration of its roads. And there was an article about this in the Albuquerque Journal yesterday, so Monday. And it essentially highlighted a lot of the same things that we've been talking about. I specifically have spoken out over the I-40, the east-west interstate that goes between the Texas state line and the Arizona state line, and how rough and how inadequate the two lanes are. I've said repeatedly that we need to add another lane in each direction. We need to improve the on-ramps, off-ramps, bridges, get it completely refurbished in terms of repaving. Long story short is, as reported in the Albuquerque Journal, some legislators wish that we would have raised our gas tax. It's 17 cents a gallon. It is a relatively low gas tax. And over time, when you charge a tax like that, the amount of money collected due to inflation and efficiency of vehicles goes down. The amount of money comes down somewhat, which leads me to my next point, which is we have electric vehicles. Not only do they not pay the gas tax to maintain the roads, but they don't pay anything at all, and they're heavy relative to a gas-powered vehicle. So we should start by paying, making those people pay some money for the roads.
I-40 and I-25, I mean, obviously major arteries through the state, and I'm assuming that upkeep is federal or federal and state combined.
Yeah, I think it's both there.
But regardless, are we at a point where we're seeing some of the, you know, we talk about just cars and how heavy they are, the EV, you know, cars. How about semis?
I don't think I've seen a electric semi. I do not know how that would look relative to a traditional semi.
That's got
to
be heavy. I mean, heavy.
Yeah, I mean, it's generally speaking, with electric vehicles, you need to know what is an electric model. You know, you can always pick out a Tesla. There's a lot of electric vehicles that you can find as well. But I don't know that I've seen an electric semi. But yes, that would be another very heavy vehicle. But I'm going to run through just a few of these ways that the legislature should be considering before we get to taxes and raising taxes. We have $7 billion in unspent capital outlay. We need to use some of that. Specifically, I would urge the legislature to consider creating a formula that essentially puts half of that money into roads. I think we need to have a coherent capital outlay process, and we have dire needs, but the politicians don't necessarily focus on those needs. They focus on pork for their own constituents. We have a prevailing wage law that dramatically increases the price of labor on construction projects that needs to be addressed and eliminated. We have plenty of money in the permanent funds and budget. You know, right now the governor is going to expand childcare for free for high earners. We could use that money to help with road construction and maintenance. We should be taxing native tribes and pueblos, which do not pay the gross the gas tax on gasoline. You wonder why some of these kind of isolated stations on native pueblos and tribal lands are cheaper than they would otherwise likely be. Well, it's because they're not paying that state gas tax. There's ways that the legislature could impose that tax on those folks as well. So I'm not even 100% against raising the gas tax at some point, but we have a lot of aspects of the way we fund our roads and keep them maintained that we can and should be discussing and addressing.
Yeah, and I don't know enough about how the bidding happens for the work that's done on the roads. I think we can all agree the roads need to be improved. But, you know, Paul, often I'll go by a construction site around the state when I, you know, I don't travel that often, but when I do, and I notice the construction crew, often those plates are from out of state. And you know, I don't know all the, you know, the ones and zero, you know, all the figuring out what's the best way for the state to benefit from it. And I know that there's probably a bidding process, but, you know, the thought occurs to me, and maybe it's a simple thought, maybe it's too simple, but I sure would like to see local construction, you know, seeing the money stay here.
I understand, and I'm not saying that that's not a good idea. What I would actually feel much more strongly about, remember we talked about the heat rule a while back? I would prefer to see a lot of the construction done at night, not because of my concerns about heat, although that is part of it if you can sell it on that. But we have specifically right now going on Coors, which is a state road. Now, they're putting in a fair amount of development in there by St. Pius X and just north of I-40. It is an absolute disaster, and it comes and goes, but it's generally speaking been very, very bad. A lot of that construction needs to be carried out at night on these major throughways and thoroughfares because you're getting traffic jams and making it very hard on people to get to where they need to go.
And I'm going to guess to get the crew to work at night is an additional cost.
Probably, but you know what? During the summer, it actually would be more pleasant, I would think.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying you wouldn't have to charge them a little extra, but again, there's a lot of different things we can do. Raising the gas tax is not beyond the pale, but it's something that should not be the first and only aspect of road finance that's addressed and changed.
All right, raising the gas tax, not beyond the pale. How about increased funding for college athletics? Is it
not a good idea?
Looks like, you've written it's a dangerous path.
The athletic directors of UNM and NMSU recently spoke at a legislative committee hearing. They didn't explicitly come out and say it, but last session there was a bill to put another $1.5 million from the budget into college athletics. New Mexico's college sports teams, while competitive in many ways with their peers, they are not as well funded, but that is not because of the state and its lack of money for higher education or even athletics. It's because we do not have a corporate presence in the state of New Mexico that's going to put money behind college athletics. We need to diversify our economy, grow the number of corporations that are located here, and do that, not pour money into what amounts to paying players. You know, I'm old enough to remember when college athletes lost their scholarships and championships and many other aspects of their performance on the field or on the court because there was some booster that had given them a check or had them for a meal or something. And now universities are being given a threshold of up to $20 million that they can just pay to athletes in the form of what's called name, image, and likeness. And the last thing we need is for New Mexico taxpayers to be on the hook to pay athletes at our universities to play on the field. That is a terrible, terrible idea.
You'll find it, the blog written by Paul, at errorsofenchantment.com. And got about three more minutes, Paul. Some time to look at another issue, broadband deployment here in New Mexico. You write it's a costly use of our tax dollars.
The long and short of it is that we have this nifty technology called satellites. Elon Musk and our Starlink system. Is
have you
the
seen
most...
Have you seen it?
I have.
I have not.
I mean, not like no, on the ground next to me, but in the air. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I have not.
Oh, that freaked me out. That was like in April of 2020 when I first saw Starlink deployed, and I thought, oh boy, that was at the beginning of COVID. No, that was at the beginning of COVID. I didn't know what was going on, but I've seen it at least on one other occasion. And the idea of taking wire and driving it all the way out into sparsely populated parts of rural New Mexico is a great way to spend lots of money, but it's not the best way to deliver internet access to rural people. I'd rather see the state subsidize folks for their monthly Starlink or HughesNet bill, whatever satellite service works for you. New Mexico received $675 million in the bipartisan federal infrastructure bill. The legislature itself allocated $124 million in 2023, and in 21, they put aside $70 million. All of this money is like being the guy that funds the buggy whip manufacturer after the Henry Ford Model T has come out. Buggy whips and broadband, not the latest cutting-edge technology. Yes, it makes sense in Albuquerque, where you have a dense population, a lot of businesses. That is fine. But going out to the Navajo Res or some of these rural communities we have around our state and at taxpayer expense, tens of thousands of dollars to put in internet service is absolutely ludicrous for using the taxpayer dollars to do that. If you live in a rural area, God bless you. That is wonderful. But you're not going to have the same services and not the same internet access as you are going to have in middle of Albuquerque. So it's a lot of money at stake and a lot of wasted money, in my opinion.
Hey, Paul, as I mentioned earlier in this broadcast, you do a lot of traveling around the state and elsewhere. You mentioned a trip recently, not too far distant past, to Washington, D.C., also to New Orleans. You had a chance to head out for a convention and catch up with familiar faces.
Yeah, the most notable is Hannah Scandera, former education secretary, really just a lovely person and somebody who we worked with to try to reform the education system back when Susana Martinez was governor. And I think if we'd followed their path to its logical conclusion, we would have. And if the Democrats had engaged, there were flaws and there were issues with what Martinez was doing, but they weren't willing to engage. All they wanted to do is fight, fight, fight. They would have had a positive impact on New Mexico children and their educational outcomes. Also, I got to see Arthur Brooks. So I don't know if you've ever met him or talked to him or had him on the radio, but he's got numerous books, The Happiness Files, Conservative Heart, Love Your Enemies.
Paul, I hate to cut you off. Obviously, we're out of time. Again, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Hey, let's do this again next month.
We will.
All right. Thanks, Paul. RioGrandeFoundation.org.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.